It's Behind the Bots time.
From the NHRL studios in Norwalk, Connecticut, this is Behind the Bots, the podcast that brings you the stories of the builders behind the bots. I'm Chris.
I'm Luke.
I'm Lindsay.
And I'm Kyle.
And today on the podcast, our interview with Elaine Wu from Railgun Max.
We'll wrap up our show with this week's installment of Robots Around the World. If you like our show, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, TuneIn, CastBox, Player FM, and Podbean. You can follow us on Facebook at Behind the Bots and tell a friend. We really appreciate your support.
Time for this week's Combat Robotics News. I have two news items for you today. First up, catch live robot combat this weekend in New Jersey, Missouri, Texas, Oregon, and the UK. In the UK, students at Bristol University will be fighting beetleweights on Saturday in Bristol. Several hours north, Steel City Antweight Robots, aka SCAR, will be fighting beetleweights on Saturday at a food hall in Sheffield. That said, the big event this weekend in the UK is no doubt Robo Dojo, where they'll be fighting 30-pound full combat robots at a farm in York. On over to the US, where Western Allied Robotics will be fighting antweights and beetleweights on Saturday at Experiment PDX in Portland, Oregon. In Texas, they'll be fighting fairyweights, antweights, and beetles as part of the Moon to Mars Festival in Houston on Saturday. Just a couple miles north of Houston, they'll be fighting antweights and beetleweights at Texas A&M University on Saturday in College Station. In Missouri, they'll be fighting antweights and beetleweights at St. Louis Comic-Con on Sunday. All that said, the big event this weekend in the U.S. will be the return of G-Squirrel, a.k.a. I don't know how to really say it. It's like G.S. Carl. I'm going to just call it G-Squirrel, where they're going to be fighting antweights and beetleweights as part of the Trenton Computer Festival in Ewing Township, New Jersey, this Saturday. NHRL fan favorites, Yes Chef, Apex Predator, Mako, Walter, and others will be competing in New Jersey this weekend. So if you're in the area, stop in and say hi. And finally, BattleBots headed to Austin, Texas this past weekend to host BattleBots Metal Mayhem, a 15-pound tournament for high school and college combat robotics teams. Competitors fought in a 12-foot by 16-foot arena with Farouk Tahid emceeing and the entire BattleBots executive team in attendance, helping run the event in partnership with Bots IQ. The event's winner was Frankie, a 15-pound egg beater spinner. And that's it for this week's news. Now, very quickly, before we get into our incredibly delightful interview with Elaine Wu, I want to recap the March 2024 NHRL qualifier event. This happened 2 weeks ago. Elaine was there. A lot of other people were there. It was an incredible event, very smooth. And it was our second qualifying event of the season. Let's start here with the Beatles. I would love to get your thoughts. In the Beatles, Brian Boxall earned his second career Golden Dumpster with Eruption, defeating fellow Team WPI team member Jared Leibson and his bot Red Panda. Sleepy Anime Girl Club came in third with Chainsaw Kitty and Jelly Baby. Your thoughts on the Beatles?
Good to see Sleepy Anime Girl Club do so well. And honestly, it felt good to see Brian Boxall in top form. I feel like he's been in experimental mode for a long time now. It was cool to see him showing up with an Apex Predator, something that was incredibly terrifying, just a very simple, very down to brass tacks, this is what we use to kill things robot. I loved that. It was really great to see.
I have, two anecdotes really from that second to last round in the Beetleweights. First of all, Paige, and it was Jelly Baby. That was Paige's fifth tournament that she had competed in, and not only obtained her first win in March, but then made her way all the way to the final end of the bracket for March. So, like, went from never winning at a tournament to going on such a tear that she almost corralled and dominated the driving of the tournament so well that she almost took home a dumpster. And going the full 3 minutes against Brian and Eruption and coming out with a bot that was in one piece, and not just one piece, looked like you could have charged the batteries and fired it back out there for another 3 minutes. That is so incredibly impressive. Also, yeah, Kazuya, you know, breaking that fifth place barrier. Of course, I think ending up in fourth or third.
I think tied for third, yeah.
Tied for third, you know, that shows the progress that Kazuya is making. And, you know, I was almost dead convinced that Chainsaw Kitty was going to take the dumpster in the Beatles. Kazuya grinds, and seeing her ability with her weapon going down so early in the fight to take a bot that is not necessarily designed to be a control bot become a control bot, that was very impressive. But the other thing I wanted to point out, though, was really about the fight between Brian and Paige. I was really happy to see, like, Brian gave such a complimentary nod to Paige and Paige's driving that, like, I was so proud of him of being that dialed in to the spirit of what was happening here in March. And it was really heartwarming. And I couldn't have really thought then that maybe there was anyone else who deserved the dumpster as much as Brian in that moment. Like, that was awesome to see. And Eruption, a new iteration of this bot coming, kind of like tearing out, did such an incredible job. He drove the hell out of it. It was a very, very justified win, and he deserved every inch of it.
Yeah, I mean, Brian Boxall was just like, he was undeniable at that event. He was really on a tear. And I know that this is just one step down, and he's really eyeing the championships in November. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, if he's able to come back with Eruption this year, what, you know, he'll, I know he was planning on introducing a flywheel, I believe, yep, into Eruption that he wasn't able to get done in time. So, I mean, it sounds like it's only going to get more reliable, more well driven, like less at risk of gyroing. So I'm really excited to see that. But yeah, I mean, I don't think enough can be said either about Paige and Jelly Baby, which is just honestly a delightful name to say out loud. So thank you, Paige, for, you know, just giving us that. But I was in the pits after the event when everyone was kind of cleaning up, and Kazuya and Rem were like, finally, like, you took this piece of advice that we've been giving you. I think it had to do with belts. I don't quite remember. And they were like, finally, this is like one of the things that really, you know, enabled you to like power past and dial this thing in. And Paige was like, well, I couldn't make that change right away. I had to test out every other thing that I thought was going wrong with the robot. And I had to like methodically go through each problem until I could get to the belts. And I was like, what an interesting approach to building. And like, it shows you, I feel like it's kind of a different approach than some people just try to change everything all at once and keep tweaking everything. Whereas Paige seemed more of the mindset of like, I'm going to get each individual thing right. And then once I get that thing right, I'll move on to the next thing. If I'm interpreting her strategy, you know, correctly. But I think here we are. She got all of the things right. And losing by a judge's decision to Eruption in the semifinals is like, holy moly. Wow.
With a really great argument to go to the World Championships.
Oh, yeah. There was some fun, friendly banter between Kazuya and Paige to get to this, you know, depth in the process. But, man, heart went out to Kazuya. It had some positively brutal fights earlier. What was it against Beetlejuice? Was the fight her last win? Was maybe the most violent 3-pound fight I've ever seen. Just relentless. But yeah, I mean, it was a little heartbreaking to see her go out, you know, with a hit. It looked like a hit to the weapon motor.
So the belt was like barely clinging on, but it seemed like it was maybe a seized motor that actually stopped it from spinning. Because the belt was literally hanging on by the skin of its teeth, but it was still there.
I think the lesson to take away from that whole situation is, sure, you can kill Chainsaw Kitty's weapon, but now you just have to deal with, surprisingly, a very dominant control bot.
Right, right.
The only problem is, without the weapon, if, you know, Chainsaw Kitty got on its head, there's not really a way for it to self-right. But, I mean, Keziah drove that robot as well as anybody could have and came within an inch, like, honestly, just a couple points of that JD. And but, man, also, you know, great success to Jaren, who's also been grinding away for so long. I don't want him to get lost in this either, because, like, he got to the finals with Red Panda, who's showed up quite often and has kind of lied low. And now here he is qualified.
Something to point out there, I believe Keziah mentioned this in the Discord earlier, like this week, or no, it was last week. She called it our curse. We mentioned that even though her weapon motor is exposed, it never gets damaged. I believe I mentioned that on the live stream.
Oh.
And literally 15 seconds later, the side of it got clipped and seized up and it would not spin anymore. So that is what killed the weapon in that fight.
How dare you?
Yeah, normally it's you, Lindsay. It's just, it was me this time.
I know. I had to put on you.
I'll say that none of us have any magic abilities, and that doesn't really have any influence over what's happening. I felt really bad because, like, prior to the fight, when Keziah was going in, I was like, this is it! You're gonna do it! Like, this is it! It's finally happening! And she's like, don't say that! Don't say that! And then, you know, that happens. And I get to blame Kyle at least now, but...
And now, unfortunately, you know, for Chainsaw Kitty, she is listed at, I believe last time I checked, 26 on the waiting list. That might have changed in the last couple of days. And I know Keziah is checking, I think, every half hour, she said. But so it's not even guaranteed that Chainsaw Kitty will make it back for April. And one of the interesting kind of consequences, I would say, of this new lottery system that we have at NHRL this year is it's kind of going to change the narratives that we're able to build for the teams competing. Mm. One of the things that I think, you know, we had so much fun highlighting last year was, like, Chainsaw Kitty is, like, always the bridesmaid, never the bride, like, coming in at just shy of qualifying, I think it was 3 times. And that was a story that we were able to build upon and tell throughout the entire year because, you know, bots like Chainsaw Kitty came to every single event. Now it's not guaranteed. You kind of don't know how many you're going to be allowed to go to. Mm. And so bots like Chainsaw Kitty may not be able to go to April, although I think at 26 they have a really good shot. But then they may not be able to go again and again. And it just will change our ability, I think, to tell this, to build the same narratives. Because we're going to see bots less. And we're going to see more bots, but fewer times, most likely.
And there's just more ambiguity around, like, what your record has justified you, you know, to kind of present yourself for the World Championship stake, right?
Okay, all right. Listen. All right, I'm going to throw my hat in for the announcer's curse one more time. In that Chainsaw Kitty finished 3rd here at this event. Mm-hmm. I obviously hope that Keziah finishes 1st or 2nd later in the year. But with 3rd place finish and her bot being ranked number 2, she's all but guaranteed to get into the finals. 100%. So, like, I'd be very surprised if there was... I mean, she's at the top of the list.
We just can't at the next NHRL get on the desk and say,
you can't guarantee. You know, yeah, It's not guaranteed, but it's I would I I'm gonna I would eat a pair of shoes if, you know, Kazuya doesn't get into, you know, get an invitation for the finals this
Just
year.
Like you ate those stickers that you were supposed to eat.
Yeah,
I ate
buddy.
Stickers. All right, listen, I didn't eat car decals, okay? All right, and that's a giant throwback from like
you'll eat a Skecher, please.
Greg Nidell has not forgotten.
No, we're going to be talking about macroplastics in Skechers over the next like 3 weeks. If you actually agree to this, Luke.
All right, listen. I'll eat a pair of like my toddler's Toms. Okay, those are biodegradable. Okay. so yeah, no, I'm sure she's going to get in for the finals. I was just captivated by the Sleepy Anime like storyline and their like rise in this competition. I like admittedly I had no idea what Jelly Baby was, you know, like going into this competition. It's not a robot that I was researching, but Paige has my attention, Jelly Baby has my attention. That was just driven so well. The robot was just bulletproof the entire day,
right?
And I just love to see this team building up its stable. Like everything was all about Chainsaw Kitty for all of last year, and now we have two really heavy hitters on that team. Like they're really developing the bench, which is cool. So so well done to Kazuya and team.
We move on to the 12s, I've got some honorable mentions. Perhaps others do as well. Number one has to go to Lars Elliott in Impact. I really thought that Impact was going to go all the way until it faced Eruption, right? I believe. Like, no shame in losing to the winner. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if things had shaken out a little bit differently and maybe he had faced some other people in the lineup, I don't know. I could see Impact right there at the finals. That bot is scary powerful. And then my second honorable mention goes to Michael Cross and Stag Beetlebot.
Again,
I was so proud of him.
I'm always proud of him. I'm proud of him when he goes there and he goes 0-2. Because every single, even if he goes there and he's 0-2, like, I always touch base with him prior to the start of the tournament, and, like, almost shaking with, like, the excitement of, this is the 12 things that I did to this bot between, you know, this event and the last time I competed. He's like, you know, I printed this new chassis. I'm trying this new armor configuration. I'm doing this with the, you know, my wheel hubs. I've incorporated a new LED into behind the beater. It's just like, yes, dude. Like, yes. Like, you are here for the game. He made a great run in March, and he's one of those people that's new to the sport. And he's going to be someone that you probably don't want to cross paths with in a year or two from now, just because he's just going to continually iterate and he's going to test those things that are new that he's implementing, and he's going to break them, and then he's going to fix them again, and he's going to break them again, he's going to fix them again until like they don't break anymore. And that's when you got to watch your back for Stag Beetlebot.
All right, very good. Now moving on to the 12s, the winner was yet again Zack Knight and Prom Hedda, who was looking bulletproof all day, defeating Drew Davis and Blackjack in the finals. Drew is now officially the first NHL competitor to qualify for the finals for all 5 years in a row that we've been holding the finals. Your thoughts on the 12s, your thoughts on Drew's run.
We got to get Drew on the show. Like, I want to talk. He's come so far. His journey, you know, has progressed so much, and now he is leading his own, you know, after school program at his school, teaching this to you know, kids who are just interested in it. His children have come so far. Like, yeah. I want to get them all on the podcast and learn, you know, about their experience, because it's been a joy to watch.
He's undoubtedly one of the best people at NHRL to put a microphone in front of, you know.
Oh yeah,
just his thought stream and his demeanor and the way that he breaks down a challenge and the way that he is humble and like the way that he acknowledges the community. It's just what, you know, there's only a few people like that in that vein, you know, thinking of like the Brandon Bennett Youngs and the Zoes and the folks like that out there that just have this like deep philosophical like connection with the community. It's awesome to have people like that in on the roster. And I'm super proud of his run that he had, and it's going to be awesome just being able to tell the story of him making his way to the world championships. And you never know. You never know.
Like I really love the glow up in the robot. Like Blackjack has been, you know, like middle of the pack, you know, for now a couple of events, and to see it really rise and to take home second place was incredible. Prom Hedda, you know, like just one of the most feared robots in the box. Like it may not be the number one ranked as well, but like when you hear that thing spin up and you're standing box side, like you know that you're not going to be coming yep. out of the box like with your robot looking right. So, you know, just a really explosive final. And it's great to see Zach back on top. You know, like there was an entire year where, you know, it was Zach Knight and Prom Hedda just running through the 12s. So it's cool to see, you know, him with yet another golden dumpster.
And big ups to Zach. You know, I haphazardly put out this big challenge for the March of Madness for my Sword and Sorcery event. And he changed his last name to Knight just to come amazing. And show people up. Literally amazing. Contacting City Hall and everything. That was awesome.
Incredible. Now, moving on to the 30s, no surprise. The winner was yet again Matt Boris and Emulsifier. I don't know. I just feel like, I don't know. What's the analogy? Like, what's the pop culture analogy? It's like, you know, he like comes down from the mountain like once a year and just is tossing people around. Do you know what I mean? It's like, it's like if Matt lived in Norwalk and he was able to come to every event, he would just have all of the golden dumpsters, you know? Like, it's amazing.
It's like if Joey Chestnut was not competitive all year long, he just stayed at home and he watched, you know, whatever TV and just went about his daily life. And then everybody was like competing in all of the local eating contests, trying to catch up to him. And then he just like rolls out of bed on, you know, July 4th for the Nathan's hot dog eating contest and then puts everybody to shame. That's what it feels like.
Yeah. Matt Boris is our Joey Chestnut. That's perfect. That's perfect.
My favorite Matt Boris quote from the entire event was, I asked Matt like on Friday, I was like, hey, so what have you changed on the bot? And he looks at it and he looks over at his rest of his teammates and he kind of squints his eyes a little bit and he thinks, and then he goes, I mean, nothing really. No, I haven't even changed out any of the bolts. It's the same thing that I brought here for the finals. Yep.
It's wild. It is wild. Emulsifier, you know, it's the reigning 30-pound NHL champion. It has three golden dumpsters now and two golden brats. And, you know, won the 30s the last 2 years in a row. Was the runner-up for, you know, like the 1 year that it didn't win at the golden brat. It's an incredible machine. And it came this close to losing to Vorion, which is just, like, so cool. Like Brandon Bennett Young has watched so much Emulsifier tape. He has thought about that robot and that matchup a ton over the last year, 2 years. And it was heartbreaking to see that he was so close to winning, but he just didn't have the reach that he needed to really reach out and touch Emulsifier in these moments. Like if you watch that Emulsifier Vorion fight, there were several moments in that fight where Brandon was at an advantage. And if he just had a tiny bit more reach, he would have just chewed right into Emulsifier. So, so close to winning another golden dumpster for Brandon. And if there's one thing that I know about Brandon is that he does not allow the same failure twice, he is going to rewatch the Boreon Emulse firefight another 50 times, figure out how to get more reach out of that robot, even if it means Boreon version 3 or whatever, you know. Just came so, so close to beating Matt. So really, props to Brandon. Tough way to go, I think. But I'm positive he's going to come up with a solution.
Just like in his pre-fight interview, he said, like, I want to come in at an angle, like a three-quarters angle or whatever. I'm going to try to do whatever I can to get under his, side tank treads. And, you know, go back, watch the fight. He was right there. Less than 30 seconds into the match, he came in at that three-quarters angle. You know, the tips of his forks kind of started making their way under the tank belts, but it just like you said, Luke, he just didn't have that reach and he didn't have the momentum to get the full scoop and then deliver his opponent into the weapon. And that was, you know, just the way the match had played out. But with even just a few more miles per hour under his belt, he probably would have landed that scoop. He probably would have delivered that weapon into the tank treads of Matt. And that would have, just like he also said in that pre-fight interview, you know, whoever's going to have that first big hit is probably going to win the match, because you're going to, you know, be carrying that forward into control and aggression. And both of those weapons were devastating. And it's not like you can come off of a big hit from either bot at 100%.
Any other thoughts on the 30s? Any other thoughts on Emulse Fire, on Boreon, on Mr. Honorable Roper?
Honorable mentions. Yes. Oh, okay. Yes. Honorable mentions. Of course, Mr. Roper, who miraculously, let's say, made the bracket. That was very exciting.
We don't know that yet. We're just hoping.
No. I'm sorry. I mean, made the bracket for that day.
Oh, yes.
Like, yeah.
Made the
prime time.
Prime time. Yeah. Sorry. Misleading words on my part. So yeah, that was great. I don't know what to say about that robot, except that it has already captured the hearts and minds of an entire nation.
FYI, made the bracket twice already this year. Another robot that you wouldn't expect, that has a legitimate claim to the world championships. Mr. Roper.
Who went in ranked number 3. I don't know what his ranking is now. It may have gone up.
Number 3 seed, Lindsay. Number 3 seed.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm just all kinds of alternate facts here. I thought that the rumble with a booster and all the bouncy balls is great. But my other honor... Oh, and the fact that he just can't get knocked out. He has not been knocked out yet.
I mean, that air armor inside of that Craftsman toolbox is highly effective. And I think, like... I think people are, like, sleeping on a Mr. Roper a little bit, just because it's frantic and it looks, like, fun and funny. But, like, it's a tough robot. And it's, like, scoring aggression points. And... as soon as, you know, Dr. Magnus Ambrose Detritus can, like, really get his driving reps under his belt and he can really drive that thing like a control bot, like, he's going to be winning judges' decisions left and right. Like, that robot is surprisingly hardy. And I love it. I love the entire robot story arc. I would not be surprised at all to see that robot in the finals this year and actually winning matches. So, like, I'm on team Mr. Roper.
I predict that within like two competitions, we're going to see custom machined AR-500 framing squares instead of the off the shelf ones. Just because he's going to see that as a weakness in the bot. Like, I definitely see this bot maintaining its off the shelf look, but incorporating like custom made parts.
Yeah. And then my other honorable mention. Oh, sorry. If you wanted to talk more.
Oh, no, I just wanted to say the honorable mention I wanted to make sure we brought up was Aries.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, return of the MIT kids. Interesting fact, this team, like the MIT team, had pretty much shut down over the pandemic. There's none of the original members left. Like, there's none of the teams that have, like, become BattleBots teams, become Combat Robotics royalty over the years, left at the school to kind of teach this new generation on how to build. So this robot was literally built with their engineering know-how and their watching NHRL and other competitions, and they crushed it. That bot performed so well. They did a phenomenal job for their first time out. I was so proud of them, and the bot looked really cool. So good job to that team. They did a really great job, and they got lawn darted beautifully.
Speaking of colleges, also a shout out to ASU, the folks that came all the way from Arizona, six Heck robots, yeah. A dozen builders, and some pretty funny and novel ideas that the kids that were here, I think that they had a great time and they embody the spirit and fun that is this sport. You know, there's a lot of notable bots in their roster, but Reboot, I think its name was the walking robot that actually had pink cowboy boot feet, white and pink cowboy boot feet. It was so cool to get an up close look at it. It just like I was I don't know, I was just channeling Barbie and Dolly Parton, and I'm just like, my goodness, this thing is so awesome. Like it was really, really cool. And you know, the fact that this was their kind of first foray into Norwalk, and they came and they put up a couple of great bots, and the team worked really hard together. Big kudos to all those folks from ASU.
Now, Chris, you had your own mini competition running unsanctioned throughout the day in honor of your birthday.
Ah, I believe that you're referring to the March of Madness.
Is there anything that you want to speak to? Anyone that impressed you? Maybe any winners? Are we at a liberty to reveal that at this time?
Well, I think so. We don't have to go through the list of people that have won things, but I will say that I was humbled, and I was almost a few times brought to a single tear by the level of enthusiasm and just the celebration around being huge nerds. That was so cool. Gwen, literally the ref Gwen came in a handmade chainmail shirt with the full set of accoutrement. You can't beat that. Zoe and yeah. Matt from Honeycracked, they had created a very interesting Crusades inspired duo, complete with costume and accents on the bots. One of the folks from ASU came in, like, it literally was Demon Man out there.
Caleb Hecht, I believe.
Yeah, the whole pit desk, were all menacing, like, they were donning black cloaks and looked like they were
monks, I think.
Well, death monks.
Death monks.
And then it's like, there's other people that you're just like, hey, wow, that's awesome. Great costume. And they're like, what costume? I wear this every time. Like, and you're like, oh yeah, that's right.
And shout out to Ashley for those amazing cupcakes.
Yeah. Yeah.
On a
castle stand that it was a very delicate castle stand, as Kelly had learned trying to remove the cupcake tower from the desk in between shots. There was not a safe place to hold it, so we lost a couple of cupcakes, but
I have not seen that part on the stream yet.
Oh, it was we weren't on camera at the moment.
Oh, but good.
She grabbed that thing. It was like the Leaning Tower of Pisa immediately.
It was a bad day for cupcakes, because I also made cupcakes for your birthday, and then they got thrown out.
I'm also really sad that I think the best costume of the day might have gone to someone who didn't actually get to wear it on stream, and that was Kyle, who dove into my bag of costume accessories and put together a really solid barbarian in like less than 3 minutes.
It's true. It was pretty sweet.
I hope you held on to that, and I hope that we get to have Barbarian Kyle sometime soon.
All right. Well, March was fantastic. I had so much fun. I know that we all did. A really smooth event, really fun event. The vibes were good. Join us again. We're going to be back in action at the end of this month. NHL is back Easter weekend, Saturday, March 30th in Rochester, New York for a Beatles-only qualifier at the Rochester Institute of Technology's Gordon Fieldhouse and Activity Center. Love to see you all there. So hopefully if you're in the Rochester area, you can come and join us for that on Saturday, March 30th. After the break, we'll return with our interview with Elaine Wu. This week on the podcast, we have a very special returning guest, Elaine Wu, the captain of Railgun Max. We last interviewed Elaine all the way back in August 2019, just a couple months before the pandemic. This month, Elaine returned to the U.S. for the first time since 2019 to compete at NHRL and to attend BattleBots Destructathon. We're chatting with her right before she flies back to China, so welcome back to the show, Elaine.
Hi, everyone. Hope you guys missed me.
Oh my God. We missed you so much, Elaine. Like, you were one of our favorite interviews of all time. And I just think it's so cool to talk to you because you know so much about the sport in China and in the US. Like, you've come and you've competed here, you've competed at BattleBots, and you've built this really interesting thing back in China. Like, you can. You have insight into both of these worlds. Most of us and most of our listeners, we just know about North American combat robots, maybe a little bit of Europe, maybe a tiny bit of Brazil, but like China is just a huge mystery. Like, and there's so many cool things that are happening there that I've just been just so curious about it. So I'm so glad that you're back.
Thank you.
I guess maybe we'll start just for like the last 2 weeks, you know, like you landed in LA 2 weeks ago. Can you kind of tell us a little bit more about what you've been up to here in the US over the last 2 weeks?
So like we started the whole business in China about fighting robots. What we've been doing since we got back from BattleBots was doing everything that's related to fighting robots in China. We want the whole sports can be something serious in China. So at October of 2019, we started our own robot fighting competition named Robot Fighting Time. And after the competition, we started develop our own products and then also the education parts. So after 4 years that we've been running quite maturely in China already. So I'm here in like we come back to the international stage, we'll try to see if we can do something that globally, also we can bring more builders from China to the States, also to Europe, to see more about how the technique like expands so fast in the like in the US and in the other countries. Because for the past 3.5 years, we didn't have a chance to travel abroad since everybody know what happened. Yeah. So we came here this time, we try to see if we can have a cooperation with some kind of events in the US, for example, the NHRL or the BattleBots, to bring more Chinese builder here. And also we have like many students in China since we are doing many like education related things.
So I'm so curious, like we got a question from Ryan Hunter who helps run Pit Control at NHRL. Mm-hmm. And he was like, is NHRL known, like do people know what NHRL is in China, or is it basically just you who knows? I mean, like how did you hear about the competition? Do people watch it in China? Like is it, I don't know, like it's kind of seems funny that like a league that's in Connecticut would like stretch all the way over to Shanghai. So like how did you hear about NHRL and like is it a big deal in China?
In like we have this kind of build lover groups in China that like is like a chat group, have more than like 2,000 people in there, and all these people are like huge fans of fighting robots. Everything about fighting robots, they talk in there. And then I think it was the first time I heard NHL was 2020. So everybody was talking, oh, there's really cool events in the States, and it happened like very frequently, like more like monthly event or every 2 months. It's called NHRL. So most of the lovers in China start focus on these events. And, you know, we don't see much of the videos in China, but we have the VPNs. So we watch on YouTube. And then, and there's like so many fun robots in there. It's so different as the market in China, because in China for the moment now, all the builders are thinking about winning. We want to win. We need to go get the first place, the second place. We have to be like really tough in the game. So most of the like the type of robots in China is quite similar. It's mostly the vertical spinners or the horizontal spinners. Nothing like nothing else actually. But after people seeing NHL, they start having different types coming up, like the flippers, the wage robot. And also I remember there was like a full body spinner, like the hamburger in NHL is one of my favorite ones. Yeah, it's so fun and it's so cute. And I'm starting asking people, okay, let's build a hamburger, things like that. So NHL start become like really famous after like 1.5 years. And like from the end of 2022, we start thinking, okay, why don't we compete in NHL? But you know, like we didn't know when can we travel aboard. So we were keep waiting, trying to build some new robots. Yeah. And at the beginning of this year, I was like, oh, I think now it's safe to travel around. And also I've seen like many people are coming to NHL and everybody's like so interested. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to go try first to see how it goes. And then I will come back, tell everyone what's going on. And then people can keep coming. Yeah.
So I'm curious what your experience was like at NHRL. You've been to a lot of competitions now. You've competed at BattleBots. You've competed all over the country in China at different events. You know, like what were your thoughts like seeing NHRL yourself in Connecticut last weekend?
NHL is like so cool. It's something that I was thinking of doing before, but it's quite hard to do it in China. You have like a one location with all the cages in there, and then people can come here like a party every month. It's something that is like paradise to us. So, but the one thing is different is I think all people that know me knows I'm the speaking person, but I'm not the technique person. But this time is the first time I'm actually having a robot on my own and doing all the fixing, the buildings, like the control by myself. It's my first time, and it was so stressful. Like, it's the time that I actually experienced to be a builder, like what it's real like to be a builder. So also, like, because we organize events in China, so after this experience, I was like, so the builders are really, like, hard, like, really stressful. That's why, like, everybody was telling me, oh, I didn't sleep last night when they come to my event. I was like, okay, I didn't sleep this time at NHRL. So I'm totally understand the feelings right now. Yeah.
That's so cool. Yeah. What was your experience like in the pits? Did you make some new friends at NHRL? Like, did you have cool pit neighbors? Like, or were you just like totally focused on your robots and stressing all day?
I was like, I have a target come this time. I was like, oh, I'm going to go there, be a social animal to meet new people. But yeah. I have 80% of the time, like, just looking at my robot and doing all the schools and everything. Oh my God, it was crazy. But I have Jameson besides me and he gives loads of help. He really gives loads of help. Like I was so new to the fixing parts. Like I'm the beginner. So I'm always calling like, Jameson, SOS. And then he was like there, help all the time. And also we have the moment that ran out of the belt. So I was walking around the whole pit. I was asking people, do you have a belt? Do you have a belt that I can buy or I can borrow? But it ends like nobody has it because the China size is so different with here. And then it was the story with the tape. Yeah.
We actually have a good question here about the tape. So Alex from Team MIT, who ran Aries this past weekend, writes, hi, Elaine, you've inspired us to use tape as a weapon belt. Was your team surprised at how well the tape works for your weapon?
Actually, yes, we were so surprised because at that moment, while we choose the tape, it was like, okay, let's put the tape on and then go on the stage because we don't want to give up. So maybe it can spin like 2 or 3 seconds and then we will tap out. That was the strategy before that event. We just want to be on the stage and then try. But we didn't know it actually can last until the end of the game. And it's still okay now in my suitcase. It's still there. Yeah. So like we did 3 tests. The first time we did like 5 rounds or 6 rounds and then it breaks in 30 seconds. And then the second time we turn around the tape side and then redo like again. And it was too tight. So the weapon even cannot start spinning. And the third time was just 5 minutes before the fight. We were like in a rush. So we were like, oh, whatever, just do like 10 rounds upside down. And then we just did 10 rounds and then it went well. Yeah. So we were so surprised.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. Yeah, for context, if people missed this fight, this was at the very end of the competition. You'd made it into the bracket. You were like fighting and like going pretty deep into the bracket, and you snapped a belt, couldn't find another one, and so you made one out of black tape, which was really cool. I've never seen someone do that before. Like that is it's smart thinking, and it worked. So that's really cool. So yeah. Alex says he's looking forward to seeing you again at NHRL and having another fight in the future.
We will come back.
Yeah. We've got some good questions here from Vorion builder Brandon Bennett Young. So he asks, what are some things that you found that were similar about robots in America since the last time you were here? Like, you know, you were here in 2019. Like, are there some things that are the same that haven't changed? And are there some things that are different, you know, about the robots now that you've seen them four years later?
The thing that stays the same is always the passion of the builders. The builders are still there. It's like a big family. Everybody's friendly and everybody's like, oh, we come here every month for like a party, like a reunion. So the atmosphere is still the things that we love. And the difference is there's more different types of robots coming up. And also, it's been way powerful than before, I think. It's so powerful that, yeah, it was quite shock to us. So, like, also, there's more egg beaters. Yeah, there's loads of egg beaters after 4 years. Yeah. So it was surprisingly like strong. So I was telling like right after NHL, I was telling the people that in China, the competitors, I was like, you guys should go in NHL and see how powerful the others are. So it's so different. It's still like the technology like developed so fast here. In China, we are catching up as well and everybody's improving. But I think they need to come outside to see what's actually going on with the world. Yeah.
That's a good entry to Brandon's next question, which is, over the past 4 years, how have combat robots changed in China? So like from 2019 to now, 2024.
Yeah, actually, like, you know, there was 2 big events in China, Fighting My Bot, FMB, and also King of Bots, KOB. And during that period of time, we have heavyweight bouts competition. We have like the 250 pounds as well as the reality show. But after these two organizations went down, we cannot really afford that big arena and the big size of the robots. So we start doing the 3-pounders one. So the 3-pounds one is what's frequently have in China, but the all other ways is not, we don't really have it for the past few years. But for the 3-pounds one, we are trying to keep it up with the world. So the stressful schedule I was also giving to my competitors, like we try to push the fixing time within 30 minutes. So every round is like 30 minutes gap in between. So the fixing time was actually goes faster since like compared to the full 4 years ago. Like I remember when we were competing in China at 2018 or 2019, we have like half day fixing time. For the 30-pounds one, we have like 4 hours, 5 hours. So it's like you have loads of time. You can chat and fix and everything. But it's not that good for the audience because audience have to wait after each round. So, but for these days, for the 3 pounds one that we have like 20 to 30 minutes of the fixing time. So when we have events, the audience can stay there for a whole day without any waiting time. So the game is like one by one. Yeah. So this was something that we were trying to improve, but I think we still have a long way to go because we try to start the 30 pounds events in China. Yeah, we are trying. We're planning it for this year or maybe next year.
Awesome. Brandon has a very good question around how you've grown the sport in China yourself, like the work that you're doing with your friends. Can you talk to us about like how you've grown the sport in China and how big it is today, where you're competing, how many people are competing, like really kind of what's the current size of the sport right now in China?
It's, how do I say, like, it's really tough. Like the past 4 years, we have so many moments that almost gave up, but and then we were like cheer each other up and continue doing this. Because in China, we are at the stage of teach the market. What is fighting robots? The most of questions that we've been asking for the past 2 years was, oh, fighting robot, what is fighting robot? Well, it's not really a robot. It's like a control car. It's like a car toy. So like we started from that stage. We were telling people robots is not only human shaped robots. You can have different types of robots. Like the whales is also robots. And as you know, the coding industry in China is like expand so fast because of the internet and all the apps and everything. So when the parents come ask, they were like, oh, do you have coding inside? Oh, fighting robots, why don't you have AIs and everything? And then the part that we are focused on is the hardware. Like the designs is important. What materials you choose is important. And like we started, like we go through all these parts. So at 2019, 2020, it was really hard. We went to different like shopping malls, different schools every single weekend to teach people what it is like person by person. It expressed like really slow because we don't have that much of like budget to do the advertising and stuff. Even though like you do the advertising, it's not that useful in China because like there's too many things in China, too fancy, too many things. So after like we started to do lots of cooperation with the government, actually, like the technique department, also the sports department. And this year, the good news at the beginning of this year is finally now the some of the sports governments in a different area that admit that fighting robot is a real sport. It's like a technique sport. Yeah. So before, like, people was like, ah, you say you are sports, but you are more like technology in related things. So you should go to the technology department. And when we go to the technology department, people was like, you don't have that much of AI involved. So maybe you guys will go to like the fun thing or like a toy thing. So we were being like pushing around for many, many times. But this year, finally, because of the Olympic from last year, it was like a show in the Olympics. So this year, the sports department started to say, okay, it's a real sport. So let's do it with the support from the government. So I think it's getting better. Yeah.
That's really cool. Elaine, tell us a little bit more about your job. So like you're working on fighting robots full time with your friends. Tell us more about like the company that you've built around fighting robots.
Yeah, I think people all remember my team from Ryoga Max, right? So we have Tony Tong as the designer, the main designer and the main pilot. We have Buck as the mechanic, the fixing man. And we also have Maker Cao. He's also the fixing and the co-pilot. And we have Norman and AO. These are the team, the original team. And we are still together these days. So we have Tony still doing all this rebuild of Ryoga Max version 2, version 3, version 4. Even though we didn't come to compete, but we are upgrading the design every year. So Tony is still doing that. And Buck is also full-time these days. He's like my partner. And he in charge of everything that related to technique, since I don't know anything, technique knowledge, like I know nothing about mechanics. Yeah, so I learned everything from Buck. And also AO is studying in the States in WPI. And he's also helping a lot with with like the American industry that we try to come here to do the cooperation, also with the schools, with the other people. And Norman is studying in UCLA. So I have like both boys on each, like the east side and the west side. So they are doing lots of communication with the school teams, also with NHL, with the other people, trying to do something that more like internationally. And Makerstown and Buglio, yeah, we are in the company full-timely. So I'm happy that like the group didn't change after all, but we have more people actually joining in. Many of the competitors in China are college students, and some of them graduated and they start working with me. So they are in my company now. I'm giving like more employees for the like the professional builders, for the competitors. I want them to be someone like me, that I'm doing something I love as a job and it's something interesting. So I'm trying to build up all this atmosphere in China, but we still have a long way to go. Yeah.
You gave me a really cool kit at NHRL. It is a like perfect scale model Railgun Max, and it's beautiful. I have it right here. I'm gonna show it to you. Okay. It is just amazing. It's so amazing. How many of these have you made? Like, is this a product that people can buy? Like, can you tell us more about this kit?
Yeah, this is the products that we made and we're actually selling these days. But we didn't really sell as like a C2C thing. It's more like an education kit. So we sell it with the courses that we have. Then we have teachers that goes into the schools, goes into the institutions to teach. So actually the Railgun Max, the mini Railgun Max is a limited version. We only have 10 for the moment. So we only made 10 of it. Yeah. And then we gave it out this time. Yeah. And we have other different types that maybe I can show you. Let me check. We have many other different types that, yeah, I can show you here. Let me try 1 second. Uh-oh, I cannot show it here. 1 second, I think. Never mind, let me show you on my phone. Yeah, this we have like many different types of this little robot, and it all have the same main body. So we gave out all the 3D design graphics for free. So it's like open sources. We try to make our kids to like our students to be like the first step to get involved in this sport is I buy one product, I go back and assemble everything by myself. And then I want it to be more powerful. I want my robot to look different with the others. So I get open sources graphics and then I start learning 3D design to redo the designs. To maybe the first step is to change the colors, and the second step is to make the wedge longer or even make the flipper longer. It's just like start with some easiest things. And then afterwards they can choose, okay, I want to change the motor because I want my robot to be like aggressive to break things. So they can change the batteries, they can change the motors, they can change everything inside. And within the main body, you can do everything on there. And also the gearbox, we have 6 types of different gearbox that they can actually just by push the little stick in different locations. So we developed this main body, try to, that's like whatever you need on fighting robots, you have it all on the main model. That's what we aimed to do. So we have, let me check. Yeah, we have like different types like these. We have flippers, hammers, the forks, and we have the full body spinner, the mini tombstones. Yeah, we have all these types and we're still developing more. We are like, our target is to have 1,000 different types of like the case that can give out to people. Yeah, that's what we do. And also we cooperate with some 3D printing companies, for example, Bamboo Lab, and also the materials Polymaker. And then they start to put our like graphics for free for their like players, for the users. So we are trying to expand the market like step by step. We have time. So I'm just trying to make it slow, but make sure everybody, when they start to do this, they are in love with it and nobody gives up in between. So, yeah.
Yeah. That's really cool. So do you know like how many robots you've sold so far? Like
the one I give to you like now, the one that we actually have loads of quantity is the version 5 already. We started the first version at 2019, and then we sell some of the versions in between as a test. So once we sell the kit, we get the contract the contact from our guest, so I can ask for the feedbacks and stuff, and then keep do the development. And I think we've been sold like around 3,000 to 4,000 kits for the past 2.5 years. Yeah.
Wow.
And the designer of this robot is his name is Fage. I don't know his English name. His Chinese name is Qiu Junfa. And I think people remember him because he was part of the team Wanhu.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Yes. And he's really talented and he has loads of good designs. And yeah, he made all these little cutie designs. Yeah.
It's funny, like we also sell kit robots here in the US, but I think probably the most popular kit here in the US has sold maybe 500 units total, possibly. And like the really hot kits out right now, like from Peter Garnache and from Jessica's Robotics, they've sold like less than 100 units total. Like, I mean, for each robot. So like to sell over 1,000 is huge. Like that's really, really amazing.
Yeah, that's thanks to Chinese markets because we have the population there. Like, for example, when we have some events with like Maker Faire in Shanghai, and one event for like 2 days in one weekend, we have more than 100,000 people coming in.
Wow.
So the chances is like we have chances to sell. So all the parents, they are like wealthy parents, the top like level people in China. So they're just willing to pay to buy as long as their kids are happy. So, yeah.
So if you've sold a couple thousand kits, like that must mean that there's a lot of competitors in China. Like, can you talk about the size? Like how many teams do you think there are? Like how often are you holding competitions? And like how many people have come to your competitions so far?
We had 34 competitions last year. So every weekend we have like, we have events every weekend. Sometimes we have 2 events in one weekend in different cities in China. And each of the competition, we have around 40 to 100 competitors at each area.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And then do you have like different classes? Like, is there one for like, these are adults, these are like the really pros and they're like competing for money or a big trophy or something like that. And then these are like for the kids. Like, can you talk about how you split up the competitions in China?
For the moment, we only have 2 classes. One is the mini one, the 260 grams. And that is basically for people, kids that from age 6 to 14. So these are the beginner level, since we just started doing it last year. So we only have like one level in this class. We are thinking about separated like maybe next year. We're going to give people time to catch up with the education parts and stuff. And we also have a professional level, which is the 3 pounds one. So we have the 3 pounds one. Last year, we had 8 events on the 3 pounds one. And most of that competition goes in different events that we cooperate with others. For example, like what I said, the Maker Faire Shanghai, also some of the government's technology events, we become like a show. But the fights are real. We have like a lottery, like the winner have like a bunch of money that goes on. Yeah, but not that much. Like not that much for the moment. The top, like the first place of the final of 2024 gets around like 5,000 RMB, but we give the accommodations, we give food, we give like most of the supplies for the competitors. And for the people that come here, like even they don't win anything, we have like a winning, we give them like some money for the winner and some money for the losers one. So you try to cover everything that the builders needed. Because most of the builders in China now are students. They don't really have money. So as the organizer, I'm trying to make sure they have the lowest cost.
Wow. Awesome.
Yeah.
So it sounds to me like you're running a ton of events in China all across the country. Mm-hmm. You are building this like professional league where people are really building competitive beetle weights. There's a lot of people who want to win, and the sport is just growing really fast still.
Yes.
But like growing from the small robots to the big robots, because before it was growing from the big robots down, right? Like,
yeah.
Now you're fighting at like 1-pounders and 3-pounders, but the size of your growth is just amazing. Like, that's really impressive. It's cool. I would love to go to an event or see like video footage. Like, I know you don't stream the events right now, but like, I would love to see one. Like, that's really awesome. Maybe the next time that we're in Asia, like I'll text you about coming out to an event. It's been a while since I've been back to.
We are actually planning events around September this year, and we're trying to do an international one. So maybe we get some like top 8 team from China, and then get some like 8 teams from internationally. And I'm going to invite you guys to come as well.
Nice.
It's more like a government-based event, but it's like technology, like communication events. So I think it's going to be cool. It's going to be like a carnival. Yeah. And I'm also going to thinking maybe I'm going to ask Greg to come as a judge.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm trying to bring all the old friends come to China to see how the market goes and to see if we can do some connections with the world to have like, I don't know, maybe like a global association, and then I can be the Chinese part or the Asia part. Yeah, I'm thinking about doing some like networks. Yeah.
That's cool. I'm actually going to be in Asia in September. Like my family, we're going to Japan in September again this year. So like, it's super easy. Like I would love to pop over and come and check it out. Do you know where you're holding it in September?
In Shanghai.
Awesome. In Shanghai. Okay. All right. Yeah. Like, put me down as very interested. I would love to come. Okay, good. Let's see. Like more questions here. So we were in the middle of Brandon's questions. I don't know, like 40 minutes ago. he was asking like, so you started with heavyweights. You started with really big robots, and now you're building small robots. He's asking like, does the audience need to have a 250-pound robot to like really be excited? Or can they be just as excited about smaller robots, like in your opinion?
I think like 250 pounds is always the best. As like our audience, you can have many audience states besides arena and then see how it goes in. And also for the heavyweight ones, you can do many, many different types. Because the less the weight, you can do less things in there, the less capability in there. Yeah, but as what we do in China these days is like okay. Because our arena is like 3x3, but 8 different size. So 8 different size, all glasses. So I can have more people that stands by, besides to feel the robots flying and everything. And one thing that's really interesting is like when during the events, you have the audience besides. And when the robots fly, everybody goes like this. Everybody flies with the robot. It's something I think more interesting. Because the impact is like different. One is like mini robots, you can stand really close, just like 1 meter from the glasses. The impact is like really straight to you. It's something that I think is something makes you like really happy, and you might fall in love really easily with it. Yeah, but for the bigger ones, it's more like a wow thing. Like when you see something, you will get to know, wow, it's that size, it's that big, and then it's something, whoa, the heavyweight boat can actually make the other flies, wow, how powerful it is. It's like different feelings, but I think both are important. Yeah.
We got a good question here from Matt Lantry, who builds Fallout at NHRL. Matt asks, what's the biggest difference between combat robotics in China versus combat robotics in the US? Like, I You were saying how in China it's very competitive. Everyone wants to win, and in America, we're like a little less interested in winning, more interested in kind of like what's cool or what's different or something like that. Are there other differences between the sport in China and the U.S.? Or do you want to talk a little bit more about design differences?
Not only about the designs, actually. I think the whole like environment is different. For example, like in the States, you have this kind of garage culture that someone have a CNC in their backyard and they can do all this manufacturing by themselves. They can, like, you have Home Depot here, you can get everything that you need in Home Depot, right? But in China, we don't have that kind of like environment there. We don't have a garage. Like, we all live in high buildings. It's impossible that you have a CNC in the backyard. It's really important. It's actually, it's like forbidden. You cannot have like a CNC in the living area. Yeah, so that's something different. So when we do the robots, the hardest thing is that we need to find a factory that can do this kind of specific manufacture for us. Because most of the factories in China, they have like they build for cars, they build for the other things that have big quantities. But for us, we have, oh, we need this part for two or three. We need that part for four. So for to the factories, they are sometimes they quite annoyed by that because they have to have a people there change the things all the time to like have an eye on the machine all the time. Yeah. So like the hardest thing like for the moment that we do is like to have a like a manufacturer that willing to keep doing all these things for you and accurately, not something that you just do it. Yeah. So the culture is like very different. And we don't have a place like Home Depot. So, but we have like the internet shopping. So whatever we need, we buy it on internet. But sometimes when you don't really know about the size, you have to choose everything, all the sizes, and to buy it, come back, and then to compare. So it's like, yeah, it's different. I think it's like easier to build a robot here than in China. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. However, I mean, the nice thing is there's a market opportunity in China to open up a really big robot store.
Yeah.
You know, because like if you're the company that can say like you have the option of five motors and here's three ESCs and here's six batteries you can choose from and here's the weapon, you know, that you can run.
Yeah.
Here's all the different belts and like it's all standardized.
Yeah.
You could sell thousands and thousands and thousands of robot kits if it gets to be a big enough sport.
Yeah.
Here in America, like we do have like this big like maker community where it's very decentralized. Like people are always experimenting and there isn't like people want to find it themselves. They don't want to buy it from a store, you know, like here in the US. But I mean, that's a really exciting opportunity for you, you know, cause like for you, you have now thousands of people who need to have the same motor and you can sell it to them.
Yeah.
And people are breaking motors all the time. So like, I can see why it's a successful business. So like, that's really cool. Okay. Yeah. I do want to ask like a couple of questions about, your experience at BattleBots and then like kind of what happened after BattleBots. So like the last time we saw you, Railgun Max had just a really successful season at BattleBots, picked up a lot of fans. Like people were just like amazed. You know, like you come back to China and like kind of was your experience different? Like after you went to BattleBots, like did you think about the sport in a different way?
Yes, like totally. Like the reason why we started like our business related to fighting robots is because of BattleBots. Actually, like we were like, we had many champions before BattleBots in China, in Asia. We went to the Indian game. Also, we went to the Dutch Robot Games. We have quite good results coming after, like coming out afterwards. So that's why it gives us the confidence to come to BattleBots. And we were thinking that we actually can go even further, but yeah, we lost at the end. So the thing that's like impact me a lot is like how different the environment is and how strong the American manufacturing is, and we like how easily people can get like these cool materials in the States, but it's really hard for us to get it in China. And also we thought we are really good before we came here, but after we came here, we'll be like, okay, we still have a long distance. We still have a long improvement like road need to go afterwards. So that's why like when we went back to China, we started thinking like do something that means something, not only do it for earning money or whatever, because I think like we are all okay with you can just find a job and have like an okay salary and then keep living on your life. But I mean, like we have only once in life, right? So why don't we do something that means something, that's meaningful for like maybe we can change a generation. Okay, that's like a crazy thought, but we were thinking maybe we can change a generation in China to, instead of people say, oh, I want this, I want to buy this, I want the kids to think about like, oh, I want this, how can I make one? I think this is something different. I this is what we wanted to change the generation to think about. When you want something, yourself make it. Like do it by yourself. Think on your own. And also think outside of the box, be innovative. This is what I was thinking. Because also like we have these products, why we keep using 3D printer? Like many people was asking, oh, you have that big amount of quantity, you should just like make it like plastic ones, something like the other toys. 3D printer takes loads of time and for more like a lot of quantity, it's not cheap at all. But I was like, if I do it as plastic, then we're just a toy. People won't think anything afterwards. They don't need to redesign it. But keep it as a 3D printing one, then people can know that 3D print can actually help a lot with in your life. You can actually make loads of things by yourself. You can, once, like for example, I want a toy. I want a little Pikachu. I can just 3D print it. That's something like, I think I want the kids in China to start being different as my generation. Yeah. So this is some like really big thoughts and we are trying to work on it, but yeah, it's like a dream. So we are still on it. Yeah.
That is so inspirational. I love that. I think that you are like just the you're like a real visionary when it comes to the sport in China, and you can take this sport so far. Like you can turn it into something where thousands and thousands and thousands of people are like in it, and you're going to be at the center of that. And that's really, really cool. Like I think you're like the Greg Munson or the Trey Roski of China. And like it's awesome. It's really, really awesome. I'm going to turn it over to Chris. Chris has some more questions. But yeah, Chris, take it away.
Okay.
Well, speaking of imaginative and a visionary, my first question here is from Kokoto Mane, who is one of my all-time favorite builders here. So Kikoto asks, what are some of the notable bots or teams in the Chinese robot fighting scene that you feel are worth mentioning or that you want to bring to the attention of folks out there?
You mean the Chinese teams?
Yeah, what are some of the notable teams that you would suggest for people to like look into from like the States or Brazil or the UK?
Like our favorite team is Warrior from Brazil, and also Team Reality from Europe, and also so, I think yes,
Elaine. So those teams out there, out in Brazil, out in the US, out in the UK. What are some of the teams in China that they should pay attention to?
I think, let me check the English name, because they all have Chinese names, so it's really hard. One is called Bee Stinger. Yeah, Bee Stinger. Yeah, I can send you the posters after. He's really like he's a really good driver. His driving skill is really similar to the captain of Eruption. They have this.
Oh.
Yeah, he's really good at driving. He's used to be a RC player. So he know how to, like, his control skill is really, really good. And he's like the top driver for the moment in China.
That's fantastic. Yeah. So what is the style of bot? Is it like a control bot? Is it like a vertical, you know, is it something
else? It's a drum spinner. It's a drum spinner. Yeah. And it's like have almost like 3 RPM, like the speed, 300 RPM, I think, really fast. Like the bot is really strong. And it's like a 2 wheels drum spinner. Yeah, it's really, really strong.
And what weight class is that?
Is really good. 3 pounds.
In 3 pounds?
Yeah, in okay. 3 pounds.
Well, maybe what we need to do is set up a rivalry between him and Brian Boxall so he can bring a 3 pounder to China.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I'm trying to bring them, like bring some of the good competitors from China to NHIL this August. I'm planning on this. So we might come as like 3-4 teams maybe. Yeah.
So in that vein, though, I have a question here from Silent Spring Builder, Jameson Go, and Jameson wants to know, when is the next event in China that U.S. teams can come to compete?
This is the one that I'm planning on. I think it's the beginning of September.
That is so exciting. When will there be more information out there for folks that might be interested in registering and coming all the way across the pond?
I think after I went back to China, I'm going to start like do the planning of this event because it's like a whole big event and I'm part of the organization. So we need to find the venues and everything is a government related event. And also it's more like there's a part of like investment competitions in there. So many of the entrepreneurship, we're going to bring their projects there and have like a roadshow and stuff, and we are more like the carnivals in that whole big event, so people and all, like the public can come and to be like, oh, technology can do many things, oh, this is something that's really cool, I want to become an engineer. We're going to do some inspirations for the kids, for the students, and for the audience. So I think we're going to start do the planning, and maybe like 3 or 4 months in advance, around like the end of May or June, we're going to have all this information come out. And then we will help with all the visas and stuff.
Oh, that is so cool. Yeah, I'm sure that is one hurdle that, if simplified, will get you some more folks over from the U.S.
Yes.
So I have another question here from Ryder Liangle, who wants to know, what are some of the other big competitions that we should be watching in China, and how do we watch them?
For the moment, we are the one doing the competition in China, and there's also other company that's doing it. I think it's, what's the name? I think, yeah, there's another like 3 pounds one that in the different side from China is more like the Dongbei area. I think it's called X Mind or Bad Ways, I think. Yeah, but I don't know. I'm not really sure about the view. Actually, we have videos. We have like videos posted on Bilibili. We didn't really do the live streams, but we do the cutting, like we cut the videos afterwards. And it's in like a Chinese website called Bilibili. And I'm gonna try to see if we can actually post the videos on Facebook afterwards. It's like we have really to accord to the VPN. Like sometimes the VPNs doesn't really work in China. So that's why like our like Railgun Max page have been stopped for a while. Yeah.
Yeah, that would be really enlightening to see some of the competitions over there. And I'm sure that essentially a new window, a new curtain opening to combat robotics happening on the other side of the planet, you'd have immediately a lot of followers here in the US to see how, you know, how people are looking at the sport differently and, you know, applying themselves differently. So as soon as like you can figure out how to get those over and populated on Facebook, you're going to have an audience built right in, I'm sure.
Okay, no problem. I will try.
All right, I have a question here from Zasa2, who wants to know, I'd love to hear any insights into Battle Ace or any other events currently going on over there.
We don't really know much about Battle Ace because it's mainly like a university-focused event, so it's like different with us. What we do is, our event is called RFT, so Robot Fighting Time. And we open to public for all these people that are trying to do metal robots to like fight in 3 pounds once. So it's different ways for both events. So fighterways mean more like education focused for college and university students to, they have to compete as like a school team and then using their products, their, like they build some of the 3 pounds ones. So they sell the kit and as well like for people to compete with by using their robots. So for us, we have like nothing. We have nothing. We just have like arena and we have audiences. So everybody, like you think you can compete, you can come like sign up and join the events and it's for free. And sometimes we give out the accommodations and stuff. So it's like different ways. But now there's, I think there's only these two events in China for the moment. But I think there's going to be more events coming up since the government's already saying that they're going to support this type of events. So, yeah.
Well, it'd be really interesting to see some of the folks from Battle Ace coming to an event like NHRL where we have such a huge college presence. I mean, MIT, WPI, RIT, there's so many schools. We had this huge wave in from ASU at our last event. And to have an international college team come, especially from all the way in China, I think would be such a wonderful experience for the students to kind of intermingle with engineers, you know, on the American scene, but then for, you know, the American students to also, you know, converse with some of their, you know, competition in China. It just seems like a great story.
Yeah. We have some like the college students compete in both events. Yeah. So we can hook that up.
Very cool. Well, that's a future plan. And as we get a little bit more into future plans, I'm going to hand you off to the wonderful Lindsay Bear, who is going to talk to you about the future.
Okay. Thank you.
Elaine, it is so exciting just to hear about all of your experiences. And I will admit, as soon as you were mentioning your event in September, I started looking at flights just to see what flights are like. And Chris, they're not that bad. So I don't know. Something to keep in mind. So we have a question here from Dangle, who wants to know, have you tried applying to BattleBots since you're last on in 2019? And do you have plans to apply in the future?
Actually, we've been remake Railgun Max version 2 straight after we came back from the 2019 season because we find there's so many weaknesses about the first version. So we redesigned everything and actually we made the parts out for Railgun Max 2. But because of this, this thing, we cannot come out. So we've just put everything in the storage and it's still there. But we are actually doing the design, like we are upgrading the design every year. Because like Tony, he's watching all these events like all around the world and he's trying to see what's the worst going on. So every year he has new thoughts about Railgun Max, how to make Railgun Max more powerful, more like aggressive. So every year he's redo the design. And actually we've been signing up like all the time. The Railgun Max is signing up for all BattleBots events. We were trying to see when can we come. And yeah, also I was meeting with Greg the other day. I was asking, we want a BattleBots. Like, where is the next BattleBots? We were asking as well. Because Railgun Max is so ready to come. Yeah.
I love that. I know that you were just at Destructathon and I think you saw one of the shows. How was that?
I think that's really cool for the audience. Like, it's really cool for the babies. I see all these kids, the babies like, fight, 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 fight. Like, they were so happy to see it. And I think this is something really good because, like, you can have it more frequently. You can let the people that's, like, doesn't really have a chance before to went to BattleBots to actually see the fighting robots in real life. Even though there's, like, a little bit of script and dramas in there, but I think it helps a lot with the sports. And all the babies, the kids, the lovers, they are so happy. I see everybody went out with a smiley face. It's something that I think it's something that really helps this whole market grow. So I really liked it. I liked it a lot. And I know there's like for each Distragos Throne Day, you can have like a real fight. So I'm actually thinking if we can bring the real gun Max come here as a test fight. And I'm thinking about Sobliss, Jameson Go. I'm thinking about picking him.
We've got the next rivalry right here, right now. Fighting words from Elaine Wu. I love it. I think it would be incredible if you were able to bring the bot to Destructathon and get, you know, a Proving Grounds fight in there. And you can see, you know, how all the upgrades that you've been working on for the last number of years, you know, how they're doing and learn from that. Man, that would be so, so fantastic. And yeah, maybe Jameson would dust off the old saw blaze and friends can fight. All right, so we have a question here from Chair. What is your favorite fight in the history of combat robotics? No pressure, just, you know, 1.5 million to choose from.
Actually, like the one that keeps my mind but really deeply these days is the one that's Tombstone fighting with Rotator. I remember the bomb butt of Tombstone was on fire the whole 2.5 minutes and it's still moving. Yeah, that was like something incredible and it keeps stuck in my mind. Like every time I was telling my students like, oh, there was one fight, like hilarious fight that is like a legendary fight that the robot was on fire, but he still like stays the whole 3 minutes. Like that was something that, yeah, it was my favorite fight.
Oh, that's a fantastic one. Good call. All right, so Chair also wants to know, other than building and fighting robots, what else do you do in your spare time for fun? Do you have spare time?
This is something like it's really tiring of building up the whole business in China to try to get the market improved, but I'm happy every day because this is something I really love with. So I don't really have day offs. I don't really have spare times. I sleep like really little every day. I'm like meeting all the people, try to get connections, try to make the market goals and everything. But this is something, that's my interest. So yeah, I don't really have much spare time. Sometimes, yeah, I don't really do things other than fighting robots. Yeah, but sometimes I actually like, I play video games sometimes when I'm really, really stressed out. I play League of Legends.
That's awesome. I mean, yeah, it's hard work literally creating a league from the ground up that's going to poise to, you know, change the face of China and maybe even the world from there. So, yeah. Probably not a lot of spare time. And then we have one final question here from Thomas Carroll, who helps run Pit Control. And he wants to know, what have been some of your trip highlights outside of NHRL? So what have you enjoyed doing, you know, on this trip here to the States?
The first stop was LA. I fly from Shanghai to LA, and then I went to the lab in UCLA, the lab Romila. It's a really cool lab. So that was my first stop, and it's really cool. It's something that, like, wows me. Yeah, and then I went to the outlet. Yeah, finally, I got one day off and I went to the outlet and did shopping. Like, I haven't done any shopping for the past 2 years. So that was some highlights. And also, and then it's NHIL. And the 2 days in Norwalk was crazy for me because I didn't sleep for 2 days. I was fixing my little sparkle, even though it didn't went well during the game. But it was my first time. I'm so into it. I'm so into fixing the robots. Yeah. And then after NHRL is the Vegas time. And also, I kind of like the casinos, even though I lost everything in 20 minutes. So, but it's so fun. It's so fun. I like the little machines that you just like tap, 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 tap. That's the only thing I know. That's the highlights. Yeah. And then the Distract of Throng. And also the WPI lab. I went to the WPI lab as well. That's the most interesting part of my trip, I think.
You have been all over in the last 2 weeks. That's you really, hopefully when you get back, you can take like 2 days off and just kind of play some video games.
Yeah, I was thinking about that.
Well, Elaine, thank you so much for talking to us. It is really an honor just to be able to chat with you and learn about your experiences and what you're doing. And we so appreciate your time. So thank you so, so, so much. We wish you safe travels back home, and hopefully we'll see you at NHRL in August, and then maybe thank China you. In September.
Yes, maybe. Yeah, we're going to do. I'm going to try it on that. Thank you, everybody. Thanks for having me.
After the break, we'll return with this week's installment of Robots Around the World.
Time now for Robots Around the World. This week, we're traveling to Saudi Arabia, where a humanoid robot accidentally groped a reporter at a technology conference.
What?
The robot touched the reporter's butt while gesticulating with its hands. Oh no. Oh no. The company that makes the robot says they now suggest people stay people stay one arm's length away from the robot at all times to prevent future gropings. So this really mimics just real life, right? Right?
Oh my goodness, they're robot sexually aggressive apologists?
It's like, you know, oh, that woman, if she didn't want to get touched, she shouldn't have worn such a short skirt. Oh, if you didn't want to get touched by that robot,
you shouldn't have had a pocket full of AA batteries.
God. This is, guys, this is, have you guys ever seen Spaceballs? It's like that scene where they're walking through the diner and the Mog the dog's tail just like goes up that lady's skirt. And he's like, I'm sorry, lady, it has a mind of its own. Literally, this is animatronics, guys. It has a mind of its own. If you walk next to it while it's doing its program and it touches your butt, that's on you. You walked into its path.
Not in here, mister. This is a Mercedes.
I mean, listen, the robot knows what it was doing. Okay, all right. I'm not going to sit here. Okay, listen, this is a highly sophisticated artificial intelligence robot, okay?
It's made in Russia. No, it's not.
I love how just the solution is, like, just stay away from it. Like, what? Yeah.
programming, just stay away from it.
Right. What are you going to do? You're going to program a whole butt recognition sequence so it can avoid them? Is that your thought process here?
I'm going to say in general, yeah, humanoid robots should avoid bumping into people. Like, there should be at least some kind of spatial awareness. But here's the thing. Okay, once you take a look at the project, and like, listen, no shade to Saudi Arabia, okay? But like, it looks like they wheeled like Mr. Lincoln out, off of the Disneyland lot and just like stood him up. Do you know what I mean? Like, the hand had no idea where it was going. It was just part of some kind of hand subroutine. You know, it's like, oh, I'm talking now, so I have to like start doing these big hand motions, you know? This is not a incredibly sophisticated robot. I think it was like just barely a step above, you know, animatronics.
Four score and seven squeezes ago.
Jeez.
I'm sure that if I broke onto the set of the Hall of Presidents, you know, like Mr. Lincoln would also be handsy, you know, if I got in his way. So I don't know.
I'm looking at a photo of this robot right now, and it is uncanny valley. It looks even more lifelike than like a Tussauds wax figure.
Yes.
Like, that looks like a person. I haven't seen it move, but just looking at it stationary, if you told me that was a person, I'd believe it.
Oh, you gotta Google it. It's a very short clip. It's maybe 5 seconds. It's hilarious. Yeah, and it's hilarious because the reporter looks shocked and then she chastises the robot, which is just perfect. It's perfect.
We're safe from no one.
You got to be careful around Carl 2.0. He just hasn't been the same since his last firmware update.
Oh, God.
Well, I guess that's about it for us today. We'll be back in your feed soon with another mystery guest. And until then, we'll see you then, folks.
Bye-bye.
Bye, everybody. Don't get groped.